Good morning, everyone, and welcome. Welcome to Essex Church, home of this gathered community known as Kensington Unitarians. A particular welcome to anyone who's here for the first time today. We're very glad to have you with us, and there'll be an opportunity for you to introduce yourself later on in the service if you wish. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Jane Blackall. I've been a member of this congregation for 15 years now, and I work here part-time as outreach officer, which means I do a little bit of everything around the place. Our minister, Sarah Tinker, is away this morning, so I'll be leading the service for you. I should point out, if anyone's worried, we've got technical issues with the sound system this morning, so I'm on the lapel mic, and we'll be experimenting with a freehand one later on. Just bear with us, and if anything's inaudible at any point, give me the nod and I'll go and fiddle with the levels. I don't want you to miss anything. Our opening words this morning are from Marielle Cleary. For untold centuries, people have drawn apart from the workaday world to worship, to celebrate, and to wonder at things beyond and within themselves. So we are gathered here this morning to raise our sights and look at new horizons. Life is more than toil for bread. Life has meaning and purpose. As we celebrate life together, let us seek harmony within ourselves, with one another and the world, and find our lives uplifted and made whole. Our chalice, the symbol of our worldwide Unitarian and Unitarian Universalist community, is already lit, but let's dedicate it for this hour with some words by Deborah Falk. A chalice lit in our midst is a symbol of our liberal faith, a faith built on the foundations of freedom, reason, and tolerance, a faith sustained by acts of kindness and justice, a faith that envisages a world flourishing with equality for all people, a faith that demands the living out of goodness, a faith that requires thoughtfulness, a faith of wholeness. This tiny flame is the symbol of the spark of all of this within each of us.
Marlies Brinkman is the choir director at Boulder Valley Unitarian Universalist Fellowship in Lafayette, Colorado. She distributes the following text as a handout to people when they first try chanting. It explains the brain's typical reaction to the repetitiveness of chant. She says, "When chanting, it is important not to stop too soon. The benefits of chanting are surprisingly satisfying if you give yourself time to fully experience the deepening aspects of the chant. Often a person will go through a rainbow of emotions when first learning to chant. It is completely normal to feel a bit anxious at first, then perhaps bored, even annoyed during part of the chanting. Thoughts such as, why are we doing this so long? When are we going to be done? What's the matter with everyone? This is so boring," come to mind and distract us for a moment or two as we experience negative feelings. Actually, this is a normal phase of chanting, part of the growing into chanting. And if you just keep going with a sense of trust in the work, you come out of that semi-darkness into a sense of light and connection. Some call it a place of wonder or of deep peace. Here's an example of the phases that your mind might go through. First time, the chant is new. You're concentrating on singing it right. Second time, you do it a bit more correctly. You only make a few mistakes. Third time, you sing it right all the way through. You feel a sense of accomplishment. Fourth time, you can now sing it right without much effort. You begin to think, now what? Fifth time, you feel a bit of annoyance. Hey, I've got this down, we can stop now. Sixth time, you're bored of it, tired of it. Your mind is objecting to this waste of time. This is stupid. Sometimes you do get stuck in the sixth time, but if you stay with it, your mind will go to the seventh time after a few more reps. Seventh time, you give up mentally. Throw your hands up and think, oh, well, we're probably going to go on forever, so I guess I'll just relax. Eighth time, you feel that relaxation and you sort of enjoy it. Ninth time, as you continue to enjoy the relaxation, you begin to feel something deeper. Your mind is quiet, taking a mini vacation, while you're doing this boring to its way of thinking activity. Tenth time, you continue to relax, feel the ebb and flow of the chant. Without noticing it, you are opening to a larger part of yourself, and the chanting is the doorway. A whole new way of experiencing is just beyond the threshold of this door. You feel more relaxed and more at peace, and you feel healing energy flowing within you as you sing this simple chant. You walk through the doorway and begin. The trick to chanting is knowing that the tenth time is the beginning of the work and not the end.
Dunnock's avocado again? My wife asked incredulously. We don't go out to lunch very often, but my favourite place is Jerry's Bistro, and my favourite sandwich is the deluxe avocado. I dutifully scanned the menu, considered the options, and settled on my usual. I gave a wan smile, and Nan suggested, "You're in a rut." I replied, "How come being married for 18 years is virtuous, but ordering the same lunch is a character flaw? Being faithful to me is not the same as sticking with avocado sandwiches," she said. "I like to think I'm just a constitutionally loyal sort of person," I responded. That was nearly a decade ago, and I'm still ordering the deluxe avocado sandwich, still married, and still wondering whether I'm in a rut. Why are change and variation so celebrated? What's wrong with regularity? There are certainly enough medicines extolling its virtues. What if our bodies, our minds, and our hearts functioned willy-nilly? We'd never know what to expect. Patterns give our lives a familiar framework. Through repetition, we cultivate familiar, literally a household. Through constancy of people and places, we shape a sanctuary in a chaotic world. At 10 in the morning, I have coffee with my co-workers. And at 5 in the afternoon, I go to the gym and sweat with a steadfast group of middle-aged guys. I like the sense of dependability, safety, and assurance that comes with these rituals. We can become slaves to custom, and fears of bondage seem to drive the modern disdain for traditions. We see earlier people as mindless adherents to cultural norms. When our patterns of life become thoughtless and we are disconnected from the meaning of our actions, we are enslaved. But from what do we seek to be liberated? If we have no traditions, we are free to dismiss the holidays as being insignificant and go about our work. If there are no rituals, we are released from the deep meaning in our actions. If there are no customs, we are free to welcome people into a community devoid of a meaningful story. But there is a middle way. By choosing a pattern in our lives, by understanding how it binds us to our community and our past, and by allowing it to soothe our minds, bodies, and souls, we transform a mere habit into a sacred rite. We cultivate a sense of continuity and connectedness, We shape our home in the world. So what about my deluxe avocado sandwich? Over the years, Nan and I have developed a stylized and predictable dialogue about my lunch selection. It's a sort of ritual. I know that after perusing the menu, Nan will give me an expectant look. I'll shrug and say, "The deluxe avocado." She'll give me a half smile and shake her head in mock disgust of my lack of originality. Then I'll say, "Loyalty is a good thing." And we both know that I don't mean the sandwich.
In our culture, in the modern world, repetition has got a bit of a mixed reputation. Consumerism pushes the message that variety is the spice of life. There's a certain pressure on us all to be on the lookout for what's new, to valorise novelty, change and innovation, ever to be on the move in our personal lives and not to stay in the same place for too long. So in the next 14 minutes or so, I'm going to try and redress the balance a little bit. I'm going to echo the question that we heard from Geoffrey Lockwood, him of the deluxe avocado sandwiches earlier. He asked, what's wrong with regularity? To put it more positively, I'm going to offer a few thoughts on the valuable role that repetition has to play in our lives, in the arts and in the creative life, in our worship and spiritual practice, and as we all go about our everyday business. Here's an interesting phenomenon for you to consider. A number of people who are well known for being very creative have chosen to order some aspects of their personal lives in such a way that they are extremely repetitive in ways that outsiders would think of as very dull. The popular science writer and neurologist Oliver Sacks, who wrote The Man Who Mistook His Wife for a Hat and lots of other great books, he eats exactly the same things every single day, and he has done so for many years. Every Monday, his housekeeper gets in enough supplies to last him the week. Half a gallon of soya milk, half a gallon of prune juice, about a gallon of orange jelly, 7 tins of sardines, 7 apples, 7 oranges, and a big bowl of tabbouleh. Additionally, for a treat, each day he goes up the road to a fancy chocolate shop and buys exactly $1 worth of broken chocolate. He says he never gets bored and he enjoys it with equal relish each time. The co-founder of Apple Computers, Steve Jobs, was well known to have a wardrobe full of identical clothing, and he used to put on exactly the same thing every morning. He once found a particular black turtleneck that he really likes, and then he bought 100 of them as his own personal uniform. He said, "That's what I wear. I have enough to last for the rest of my life," and so it was. In both of these cases, what I think is going on is that these creative people have decided that there's too much to think about in life, too many choices to be made, and they want to save their creative energies and powers for the things that really matter to them. For them, deciding what to wear in the morning or what to have for tea is something they'd rather not have to waste their energy on. Frederick Brossat, co-founder of the excellent Spirituality and Practice website, which I'd recommend to any of you if you don't know it, he's of much the same temperament, and he's written about this. He's another one who'd have the same thing for tea for the rest of his life. He says, "The rest of my day is spent in inquiry and exploration, new information and new experiences, and by dinner time I've had enough of the new and varied, and I want something predictable and familiar with no surprises." So this is one of the virtues of repetition. It can simplify our lives somewhat. Repetition is also something I associate with comfort and a sense of security. Think of the way that little children love to hear the same bedtime story again and again with the same inflections every night. Having certain set routines and patterns can give our lives a familiar framework, dependability, safety and assurance, which might provide a strong foundation, a necessary base of stability from which we can venture out and try something new when we feel in the mood. As Geoffrey Lockwood said, through constancy of people and places, we shape a sanctuary in a chaotic world. A sanctuary, like this one. If we've invested the time, energy and patience, committed our hearts and formed our habits in this way, we build a sanctuary to go out from and to come back to when we do feel like being more adventurous. Repetition is also at the heart of many spiritual practices and religious rituals. I expect many of us are familiar with those meditations that focus on the breathing, following every breath you take in and breathe out, and then over and over. Or walking meditation, where you focus on one step and then the next and then the next. The repetition of some simple pattern or ritual can provide a focus that may help us temporarily to escape the relentless chatter that often fills our minds. It may provide a temporary respite from the wordy, critical headspace, which I suspect is familiar to at least a few of us here this morning. Frederick Brusset says, "One of the challenges of the spiritual life is the repetition of practices over and over. It's our tendency to become tired and impatient with this process, wanting novelty instead." And to echo the words of Deng Ming Dao, "In spiritual practice, our progress may be dull or spectacular, but we must accept both. What is repeated over and over again can become enduring." Personally, I find that particularly in times of crisis or in high anxiety, I want to return to something familiar which will bring me comfort and steadiness. At times when I've been ill or in pain, physical or emotional pain, or say sitting by a hospital bed or waiting for an important phone call, I tend to repeat one of a handful of short but powerful prayers I've learned by heart. And if you haven't got such a prayer or such a set of words in your repertoire, I recommend that you seek something out that calls to you so that you have it there and ready to go when you need it most. And it's not just for moments of crisis. You might find it helpful to have a very short sacred phrase, something that you can repeat day in, day out, as you go about your business, to keep yourself aligned with your best intentions to live well every day. The Jewish storyteller Yitzhak Buxbaum says, "The repetition of a holy sentence, phrase or name can be used during work, when walking, even when you're otherwise occupied. It's relatively easy to do and therefore of particular value at times when you are somewhat fatigued or when other more demanding religious practices are impossible for you." In many other religious traditions, repetition is a much more explicit part of worship compared to what we do here at Essex Church and other Unitarian congregations that I know of. I'm thinking of the liturgy in Catholic and High Anglican churches in particular, the rhythm of the Mass, the rhythm of the liturgical calendar throughout the year, or the daily routine and practice of praying the hours in certain monastic communities, where everything stops at set times every day and the whole community comes together and says set prayers. And it's not just about the repetition that we're doing in the here and now. It's about the repetition down the ages. That's also important. There is continuity that exists in religious community. And the knowledge that many generations before you have participated in the same practices and rituals and said the same words, that adds to their power. So sometimes I wonder if, as Unitarians, we're missing out a bit on the depth that such repetition can offer. But then I realise that our freedom of worship as Unitarians actually includes the freedom to positively choose repetition. Over the last 5 years here, we've experimented with some different sorts of gathering: Heart and Soul, our contemplative spiritual gathering, which takes place one evening a month, and our small group communities that happen after the service once a month. Small group communions, I think I got my words in a twist, sorry. With both of these services, we started with a pretty much blank canvas. We could experiment, we could do whatever we liked, and we could do it different every time if we wanted to. But it turns out that even us Unitarians like a bit of repetition, and over time, the shape of both services has come fairly regular. In Heart and Soul in particular, we have a chalice lighting, a long prayer ritual, musical meditation, and time for sharing. But within that regular holding framework, there's great freedom in terms of the choices we can make, but also in terms of the energy and the contributions of the people that show up. We have cake every time too, that's the repetition, but it's usually a different cake, so there's our freedom. The same goes for Sunday mornings, more or less. The structure's more or less the same from 1 week to the next, but we can be as adventurous or not as we like with the content. And there's another little observation I just want to throw in regard to Sunday services. I don't know about the rest of you, but I don't necessarily hear something the first time I hear it, if you know what I mean. I'm not sure how much of any new idea I absorb at first encounter. Perhaps on a typical Sunday service, one or two ideas will stick, one or two fragments, and actually I think that's okay. I think I'm doing quite well if that much has stuck with me. When I first started coming here 15 years ago, everything was so new to me. Every story, every reading, every idea, every author that was mentioned. It was all a bit overwhelming. And I noticed that so many factors have to align for a new idea to go from being just part of the endless stream of stuff that's coming past my ears. to be something that I'll think about again later, something that I will reflect on, something that will stay with me long term. In the best case scenario, and sometimes this happens, for that fragment to be something that will change me in some way and influence the way that I live and who I am. If I only hear an idea once and then the speaker moves on, the chances of it making any long-term impact on me are actually minimal. So when I first started coming here, I'd go and revisit the services online and read the sermons over and over again. I do the same with books these days and podcasts. Once is rarely enough. And if we go back to the same material at a later date, we might be surprised to find something new in what we thought was familiar, something that speaks to our condition in a fresh way. Think of that old saying from Heraclitus, you can't step into the same river twice. No experience is ever the same when you try to repeat it. There's always something new to be gleaned because you have changed, the situation has changed, the world has changed. And repetition's a key part of learning almost anything anyway. People can be quite dismissive about rote learning, but this method of fixing the basics in us through drills and repetitions, fixing our memory, whether it be times tables or musical scales or a golf swing, hopefully that's the foundation for greater things, the first step towards mastery of an art. I believe that learning things by heart is again a stepping stone to something deeper. Once some new knowledge or skill has become part of you in this way, you're in a better position to call on it in a heartbeat when you really need it. A few of you know that I've recently taken up ballroom dancing. So at the moment I'm at the stage where I'm thinking about where my feet are going and what way I'm meant to be turning and what I'm meant to be doing with my face. There's a quote from the psychologist and Zen teacher Carl Fried Graf Durkheim. He said, "The more we have mastered some relevant technique and the smaller the amount of attention needed to perform the task satisfactorily, the more easily may the emphasis be transferred from the exterior to the interior." And personally, I can't wait for the point at which I've done enough practicing that all these technical things have become second nature and I can just give myself over to the flow of the dance. So just to conclude, for all this praise of repetition and routine, of course we need to remain open to the new. We need to be open to expanding our boundaries and broadening our horizons, to learning and growing, increasing the scope and the breadth of our lives. But I reckon that repetition and routine can help to provide a valuable foundation, some stability out of which to be brave, to be adventurous and venture out into the unknown. Repetition can help us to grow in depth and to engage more meaningfully with ideas and practices that we might only superficially engage with on our first encounter. So I just want to close with a few words from the Zen teacher John Tarrant, a slightly expanded version of the thing that's on the front of your order of service. He says, "Repetition is narrow and if undertaken mechanically stifles us, but it can also allow us to go deep. In meditation we repeat ourselves day and day, coming back to stillness and the breath, and again realise that we haven't experienced it completely, that it is ever more subtle. Repetition, when done right, drifts almost imperceptibly into vast new realms, but with a slowness that allows for deepening, beauty, the appreciation of the neglected moment. It stabilises our relation to eternity. May it be so for all of us, over and over. Amen." Deeply regard one another, truly listen to each other, speak what each of you must speak, be ready in any moment to disarm your own heart, and always live as if a realm of love had begun. mindful of our highest aspirations, bound by common faith and purpose, and yet beginning with ourselves as we are, let us take one more step together in the unending quest for dignity, justice, and love. Amen.